musical contraption and put your minds into any goddamn church, any goddamn mosque, any goddamn celestial, including Seraphim and Cherubim. All there now, our minds are in those places. Here we go. Suffer, suffer for world,
amen.
Enjoy for heaven,
amen.
Christians go they have,
amen.
A spiritum heaviness,
amen.
Muslims go they call,
amen.
Allahu Akbar,
amen.
Suffer, suffer for world,
amen.
Enjoy for heaven,
amen.
Christians go they have,
amen.
A spiritum heaviness,
amen.
Muslims go they call,
amen.
Allahu Akbar. Open your eye everywhere. Archbishop na miliki, Pope na enjoyment, Imam na gbaladun. Archbishop na miliki, Pope na enjoyment, Imam na gbaladun.
Never Uhuru, you are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, speaking to you from the Great White North here in Toronto, Canada. And we came out of the box tonight with the music of Little Willie John. Little Willie John singing a song that first I heard by Johnny Ace. Later I heard it by Curtis Mayfield and the Impressions. Then later, even later on, I heard it by Luther Vandross, which we played after we played Little Willie John. And on today's show, we're going to be speaking with Susan Whitehall and the sons of Little Willie John, Kevin and Keith John. And they are, Susan and Kevin are the authors of a book called Fever, Little Willie John, A Fast Life, Mysterious Death, and the Birth of Soul. And we're going to pay tribute to William Edgar John. And I would like to thank O'Malley Ishitella and Archie Shepp. Archie Shepp, I would like to thank him because he came up with the concept or gave me the name, Diasporic Music, gave the show the name, because Diasporic Music is the music that is made in the West but is not of the West. It is the music of African people in the Western Hemisphere. We're talking about samba, we're talking about calypso, we're talking about reggae, we're talking about gospel blues, rhythm and blues, so on and so forth. And you can email me at DJ at Uhuru Radio. The Skype option is Uhuru Radio. And the phone number, if you're calling in North America, it's 727-565-1599. North America is Canada, the United States, and according to what I was taught, not in school, but in other areas of life, Mexico is also a part of North America. So I guess if you call in from Canada, the United States, or Mexico, phone 727-565-1599. And if you're calling from the United Kingdom, the UK, you can phone 020-813-36629. And we're going to continue with some more great music from William Edward John.
Talk to me. Talk to me.
you say in your
can't take this. I feel like I've died and gone to heaven.
Oh, please.
This is unbelievable.
Get out of here.
I mean, Aretha, you just don't know. To sit here and hear you sing like this one-on-one is just the highlight of my career.
Okay,
this
you.
Is fantastic. If I can sing, well, I am too.
Yeah, because I sit at home and watch you and listen to your interviews, and here you are.
Wow. Well, thank you. If I could sing like you, I would never turn on a TV. I'd just sit here and entertain myself 24 hours a day.
And you are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. We were listening to Talk to Me, Talk to Me by Lou Willie John and Aretha Franklin. And I did a little research, and I found out that song was wrote by a young man who he was a character actor, John Seneca, I believe. I think I'm pronouncing his name right. But he played in... Five Heartbeats, and it will do a Google search, but a very beautiful song, Talk to Me, Talk to Me. And I'm looking at a book here called Rage to Survive, the Etta James story, and there's a photograph of Little Willie John and Etta James in that particular book. But what I'm going to do is try to do something on Etta the next time I do a show. And I think the first question I asked the John brothers and Susan Whitehall is, we'll talk, get their thoughts on Etta James. But now we want to return and play Stevie Wonder as he introduces Little Willie John, the wife and the son of Little Willie John Little Willie John was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1996.
To induct Little Willie John into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, please welcome Stevie Wonder.
This is a great honor for me tonight for many reasons. Outside of the fact of Little Willie John being from Detroit, Michigan, and being called Little, It's a great honor because as a little boy, I grew up listening to the music of Little Willie John. And I used to hear stories of how he would perform at the Fox Theater and turn it out. And obviously, we all know of his talent, his vocal talent. And I remember sitting on the floor day after day listening to the different songs that they would play on the radio of this great artist. I never imagined that I would have not only the pleasure of becoming an artist myself, but also having the pleasure of being blessed with having his son be such a very important part of my life. As a friend, as an incredible talent himself, as well as his brother, Kevin John, and to have the pleasure of meeting his wife and all of the family. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is such a great thing because so many times in this profession, we forget many things, as many people forget even today the legacy and the life of Martin Luther King, and forget the talents of music and the goodness and the great things that have happened in life. Well, this is a moment that I want you all to remember, for I will always remember it. The joy of being able to be the one to induct a great talent, someone that inspired me, into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And to also have the pleasure of presenting these awards to the wife and also the son of a great talent. Congratulations to both of you. And I love you sincerely. Thank you. Congratulations to you.
Stay over here.
Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Go ahead. And congratulations to you too, Keith as well.
Thank you.
And get a record deal. See ya.
I'm gonna kill him for that. I just have a few words I'd like to say, and because I knew this was going to be emotional for me, I wrote it down. So bear with me for a second. My mother and I would like to thank the entire Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Foundation for this honor, especially Susan Evans, Joe Gallen, and Lisa Frank for being so patient while we tied up the loose ends. This is the loose ends. And I love him for it. We accept this award on behalf of the entire John family, especially my brother Kevin, his wife Kathy, my father's only two grandsons, little Kevin and little Keith, who are in Cleveland watching this, who previously knew my father only through his music, family, and friends, but now get the opportunity to see how his peers felt about him. Among those inspired or influenced by his incredible talent were, besides myself and my brother, were people like George Benson, Donny Hathaway, Jeffrey Osborne, Levi Stubbs of the Four Tops, and the big cheese right here. Our family is very excited about this award because now people who didn't know him previously will get to know the impact he had on music and the music industry. My brother Kevin and I are purely ecstatic for my mom, who's been floating on air since she learned my dad would be acknowledged for this well-deserved, we believe, spot in musical history. She just wants to say,
I'd just like to say thank you very, very much, and I am very happy and very pleased. Thank you.
Thank you.
You are listening to Uhuru Radio. My name is Jalali, a.k.a. Norman Richmond, speaking to you from Toronto, Canada, here in the great white north, and it is, as Ray Charles and Betty Carter would say, "Baby, it's cold outside. Not as cold as it's been, but it's pretty chilly out there." But we were listening to Stevie Wonder and his introduction to Lil Willie John's introduction or induction, pardon me, into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And in 1980, I saw Stevie Wonder in Montreal, and he was performing with what should have been Bob Marley and the Wailers, but Bob and the Wailers were replaced by Gil Scott-Heron. And I wanted to ask Keith John in 1980, was he with Stevie Wonder? But right now, we're going to be speaking with the Johns and Susan Whitehall. But before that, let's listen to some music from the son of Little Willie John, Keith John. And this is from the soundtrack of School Days. This is the voice of the son of Little Willie John, Keith.
Say to you, but I don't know the way that I feel. But I'll try. From the start, you were my friend. Never thought I'd feel within love so new. Between me and you. Never really intended to love you. I never thought that we'd fall into love. But now that we're there, why don't we try? Why don't we try? Thinking how I first met you, your warm charm was a key to understanding me through you. I was never much your love, not something that I dreamed of. It's so new. What can I do? I guess you see that we're one with each other. Love so elusive, just part of the game. We both learn to play. So why don't we try? I never really intended to love you. I never thought that we'd fall into love. But now that we're there, why don't we try? Oh baby, why don't we try? Once again, I must look in the mirror. Do I like what I see? All these changes in me, and I'm crying for joy because love has conquered me. Yeah. I never really intended to love you. I never thought that we'd fall into love. You see that we're one with each other. Love so elusive, just burn.
nobody else to ever love me. You are my shining star, my guiding light, my love fantasy. There's not a minute, hour, day, or night that I don't love you. You're at the top of my list, cause I'm always thinking of you. I still remember in the days when I was scared to touch you, how I spent my days dreaming, thinking how to say I love you. You must have known that I had feelings deep enough to swim in. That's when you opened up your heart and you told me to come in. Oh my love, a thousand kisses from you is enough. Million days in your office, never, never, never. Oh no, 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 no. And I just don't wanna.
Never too much, never too much, never too much, never too much.
Woke up today, look at your picture, just to get me started. I called you up, but you weren't there, and I was broken hearted. Hung up the phone, can't be too late, the boss is so demanding. Opened the door, and much to my surprise, there we were standing. You used to work with, I sold you another dollar. I'd rather be with you, cause you make my heart scream and holler. Love is a gamble, and I'm so glad that we are winning. We've come a long way, and yet this is only the beginning.
Oh, my love, ooh, baby. Never too much, never too much, never too much.
And I just don't wanna stop. Oh, my love,
oh, 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 oh.
Kisses from you is never, 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 never. I just don't wanna stop.
Never too much, never too much, never too much, never too much.
You are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, speaking to you from Toronto, Canada. And on the line, we have Susan Whitehall, and we have Keith John and Kevin John, the sons of Little Willie John, and they are responsible for a great book, Fever, Little Willie John, A Fast Life, Mysterious Death, and The Birth of Soul. And Little Willie John's name was William Edward John, and he was born in Arkansas. And I understand the roots are from Louisiana, but he was born in Arkansas. And I wanted to say hello to all three of you. How are you doing?
Hi, Norman.
Hello there. How are you doing, Norman? How are you?
I am definitely wonderful. I'm glad to talk to you. And I guess the first thing I wanted to ask you is, in the book, there is a picture of your father and Etta James. Do you have any memories of your father and Etta James since she passed away? And she was buried yesterday.
Yeah, I don't have any personal memories, but my father knew Etta James when they were teenagers, so they went back a long ways. That would be even before I was born, but they were over the years. But I don't really have any Etta James memories personally.
You know, Norman, I did talk to her guitar player, Bobby Murray, lives here in Detroit, Metro Detroit, and he said Etta was talking about Willie all the time. And we didn't get to talk to her personally before she, you know, developed dementia, but she wrote a lot about Willie in her autobiography that David Ritz worked on with her.
And Rage to Survive.
Rage to Survive. She had a lot of stories about Willie that were just great. But her sons and Bobby both said that she was talking about Willie a lot. In fact, Bobby Murray, the guitarist, was such a rascal, I guess, and he was always getting into trouble or something. And she'd say, "You remind me of Willie."
You know what, Susan, when Keith and I met Bobby, he told us that Etta had a life-size picture of he and her in her living room.
Yeah.
We never got a chance to see that picture, but one day I'd like to see it if it's possible.
We did see some pictures of the two of them, but we didn't get to see that one.
Yeah. But they used to literally, like, by her own story, they were throwing spitballs on the bus as teenagers, you know, at the older performers and just acting up and having fun.
That sounds like I've heard those stories too. But I wanted to go back to I made a mistake when I opened up the show. Keith, you sang the song we played. Why can't we
try?
Yeah.
Why don't we try?
What film was that in?
That was from the Do the Right Thing soundtrack. Spike Lee did a movie called Do the Right Thing, a really good movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that song was one of the songs that was played in the film. And it was written by Raymond Jones and Larry DeCon.
Didn't you do a song in School Days as well?
I did a song in School Days as well. And Stevie wrote that one, and it's called I Can Only Be Me.
Right, okay. I have a question for you. I saw Stevie Wonder and Gil Scott-Heron in 1980 in Montreal. Were you singing then?
No, I hadn't joined the group yet. In fact, Kevin and I had just met Stevie, I think that same year, and I hadn't talked my onto the tours just yet. I think around that, maybe a year later, a year after that concert, Kevin and I started going to L.A. with regularly to work on songs for the John Brothers project that we were working on, and Stevie was produce it. And he had written some songs for us, and he one of the songs he wrote for us, but we didn't get to record it because he was working on one of his records at the time. And somebody told him, "Hey, that's a hit. You got to do that yourself." Was the song called That Girl?
Oh, that's one of my favorites, right?
Yeah, that's one of my favorites too.
We were there that week when he wrote it.
Yeah. So since then he's been writing other songs for us, trying to make up for taking that song back.
Norman, here's a point. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, you mentioned Joe Seneca.
Joe Seneca, right.
Yeah, he wrote that song. And here's the irony. When Keith was in School Days, Joe Seneca was also in that movie.
Yeah.
So Keith got a chance to meet him, and we all got a chance to meet him.
Yeah.
Joe Seneca was a gray beard. He played in Five Heartbeats. He always had little bit parts, right?
He did the song with the guy from a movie with the guy from the Karate Kid movie called Crossroads. Was a very, very good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Very good movie called Crossroads with, what is his name, Ray Machachi, what's his name? Ray, the little guy that played the first Karate Kid.
Crossroads wasn't about Robert Johnson, was it?
It was, I do remember seeing the movie, and he was kind of like a ghost or a spirit or something, to Ralph, telling him, you gotta, it was supposedly some area that Ralph Machaccio or whatever was supposed to go to, and he went up that way. So then Joe Seneca was always over his shoulder telling him, "Hey, you can't do that." And it was based about the blues too. It had something to do with the blues.
I think that was about Robert Johnson, but I have something to really make you
laugh. Maybe so.
Really make you laugh. Stevie was in Buffalo in 1981, and in 1982 he was in Toronto. Were you with Stevie then?
Not yet. I think the first time I was in Toronto with Stevie was 1986, because we did an N-Square Circle tour, where we had this giant stage that was square, and it had a round circle inside of the square. And the square part didn't move, but the circle on the inside did. It looked like, from the top, it looked like a giant CD player, because back then that was when Sony first came out with their compact disc player. And it looked like a portable compact disc, and it had a spinning ring on it. I remember a couple of times I thought I was going to fall off there.
Well, let me say that I'm speaking with Susan Whitehall and Keith John and Kevin John. I have something that will really make you laugh. This is something that I wrote... I might have wrote this about 100 years ago, but you know, the Concert Productions International, they used to promote the biggest shows in Toronto in the 80s. And there was a woman by the name of Liz Bronze, she's a film critic now. She was like the CPR's press officer. And she granted me this interview with Stevie Wonder, and it turned into a press conference. And,
wow.
It turned into a press conference, and what happened was I asked Stevie Wonder a question about Little Willie John. And
wow.
I heard that John's son, Keith John, sang on two of Spike Lee's soundtracks. Keith John can be heard on School Days and Jungle Fever. And Wonder and I talked about Little Willie John's career and his many hits like Fever, Need Your Love So Bad. Now, this is what I wrote. When Wonder and I spoke for about 20 minutes, and we may as well have been speaking Zulu, Swahili, or Hausa, because no one knew what we were talking about, you know. And the big man at that time was a guy by the name of John Martin, and he was a good friend of mine, second in command at City TV. And this is a direct quote. He says, quote, "We white folks didn't know what the F word you and Stevie were talking about." That was back
wow.
in 82, so yeah.
That's fantastic.
But
You know what? You know what else?
Yeah.
I just got a quick thought. We were talking about that song That Girl.
Yes.
For New Year's Eve, we were in Las Vegas doing a concert at this Cosmopolitan Hotel that just opened up a couple of years ago. And about two or three songs into the show, Steve had to get up and go do a quick bathroom thing. And he didn't say anything to anybody. But I look back at the musical director, and he shouted out That Girl. And I sang That Girl while Steve was gone. And that's at the end. He came and he sat down, and he was all comfortable and everything. But it was great, though. So I finally got a chance to do That Girl live, and I got to sing it the way he wrote it for us. that was kind of cool.
Now, I wanted to ask Susan, how did the book come about?
Well, Kevin and I, we've told the story a few times, that he contacted me at the Detroit News when I mentioned Willie in a story. And Kevin does that a lot. When people mention Willie, he does. He emails or he calls. And he called me up and we had a nice chat. And then we ran into each other, really strange accident, coincidence, at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And through that we talked about the possibility of a book. And when you think about it, it's just amazing that nobody did it until now, you know. Well, it's such a dramatic life and such an important artist. And so this is fascinating to me. Writers love, you know, to have a dramatic arc like that of a life.
Mm-hmm.
So such a quick rise and such a young talent. And it's, you can tie it into, you know, the historic, the Great Migration. You know, the family came up here with so many others did in the 40s during World War II. It's just a fascinating story. It's got many threads, and then people have such vivid memories of him, his fellow artist, that I was able, through a lot of the interviews I already do for the Detroit News, I would then always add, and hey, did you know Little Willie John? You know,
mm-hmm.
I got a little extra that way, a lot. I know there are several people who did pass on, and I was able to get them to talk about Willie before that, luckily. Because so many of these folks are in their upper, you know, 70s at this point.
I have another question to ask you now. Willie John was born, Little Willie John was born in Arkansas, but he could have been born in Louisiana. And the family originated from Louisiana, but I called you, Susan, a couple of years ago, and I was asking you about the Pruitt brothers from the Fantastic Four, whether or not they had Louisiana roots.
Oh.
And I know that, you know, there's some of the miracles, Smokey's wife and Bobby Rogers and one of the dramatics, I think Wilkins and Purvis was born in Louisiana, but the Mabel John was born. Your aunt Mabel John, she was born in Louisiana, right?
That's yeah, correct. I think she was the only one of the siblings who were born there, and yeah. She was a baby when they went to Arkansas.
Oh, okay.
She was a little girl, little.
And Bunny Siegler, what role did he play with you guys? I understand did you ever record with Bunny Siegler or for him, because you guys lived in Philly for a minute.
Absolutely. And
they were born in Philly.
Yeah, that's an interesting connection, too, because Susan's originally from Philly, too.
Yeah. But
Bunny Siegler, when we were kids, and my mom was dancing and traveling, Bunny Siegler was to us
Uncle Bunny. Yeah.
Uncle Bunny. And so we had always wanted to work him, and then years later he was working with the OJ.
Oh, he was doing the Philly International stuff,
working with everybody
over there. Yeah.
And we wanted to work with him, so we had a chance to work with him on some of his recordings, with Instant Pop.
Yeah, we'll never,
And then in 1980, he actually produced a song, a single on Keith and I for RCA. Mm-hmm. And we also worked with him on a Lou Rawls album. We did background vocals on it. So Bunny Siegler, we had a ball with Bunny, Uncle Bunny. We had a ball with him, or as people call him, Bundino Sigalucci. We had a lot of names for him.
Yeah.
But it was wonderful working with him. He was a lot of fun.
And we learned a lot of things about the studio and stuff from him. A lot of little tricks and stuff.
Yeah.
And that was our first and only to this point our only chance to opportunity to see what it was like to be in the control room.
We were so
used to being in the recording booth. You know, growing up singers, we had done some studio stuff before that, and we were always told, here's where you do this and here's where you do that. Well, with Bunny, it was like a lot of the party vibe songs. We would be right in the control room, and we'd be in there recording.
Right
there.
It was next to the engineer.
It was great.
Well, I have a song that Bunny Siegler sang. This was a surprise birthday party, where he gets up and he sings My Funny Valentine. I think we will fire that up and come back and speak with the three of you. This is Bunny Siegler. They call him Philadelphia International's secret weapon.
Oh, yeah.
It's your baby I'm heroin. When you open it to speak.
John was a big fan of Paul Robeson, and also Caruso, but he, I guess, figured out early that as an African-American, he might not be able to make any money doing that type of music. Did you remember your father talking about Paul Robeson at any time, Kevin and Keith?
Well, I can't say I remember him mentioning the name. Mm-hmm. My father loved music in such a broad spectrum of music. Mm-hmm. He always was singing something, you know. He loved the Grand Ole Opry. So I'm saying he just loved music.
Well, the Grand Ole Opry. Go ahead, Susan.
It always amazes me. People are surprised at that, you know, that he loved country and Grand Ole Opry. But yeah, and he did take a little bit of instruction in classical music, and then it cost too much money for the family, so he abandoned it after a while. But it was right on the campus of Wayne State, where the conservatory is.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I grew up in California, but Louisiana, when you were in Louisiana, country and gospel, that's what you listened to. And when I was in Africa, I was in Ghana one time, way up in this place called Abri, and that's up in the hills of Ghana. And I was in a woman's house, and we listened to country and western all day Sunday.
Wow.
And I'll give you a story that will really make you laugh. There's a former president of Tanzania, Julius Nyerere, Mwalimu Julius Nyerere, came to Washington. I think maybe Jimmy Carter was president at that time. And they asked him, was there anything he wanted to do or anybody he wanted to see while he was in America? He said, yes, Charlie Pride. So they flew him to Nashville, and he caught Charlie Pride. And, of course, Brother Charlie didn't know who Nyerere was, but that's another story. That's a whole other story.
It's interesting that if you analyze the music, that they are connected. I mean, and blues tends to have a good story, and so country tends to have a good story, and the melodies and stuff move around quite a bit too in both of them. So yeah, there's parallels between the two, and I've always loved blues and always loved country. You know,
It's in the book, but I'm going to revise it a little for the second edition. But Willie did do She Thinks I Still Care, which is very connected with George Jones and people's minds. And Elvis heard Willie's version and loved it and decided he really wanted to sing that song. I think George might have recorded it first. I have to still nail that down. I don't think Willie recorded it first. They recorded it the same year, though.
Right.
But Elvis heard Willie's version and was knocked out. So it's like I said, a song that everybody connects and remembers George's version. And my personal favorite is Big Blue Diamonds, the country song that Willie did.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, that's a great song. But when you hear him sing it, you don't think country, but he's singing the song.
Yeah.
He's singing the song.
Yeah, it's like mm-hmm. it's like a country song. Yeah.
You know, we opened up the show with "Never Let Me Go," and I know that was done originally, I believe, by Johnny Ace. But I mean, there's so much stuff coming out on YouTube now. You don't know who did a song first, but "Never Let Me Go" was always one of my favorite songs. I remember listening to that as a kid. Mm-hmm. And I remember your father's music. I mean, my father was a musical. He was a nut, and he bought records in the Jet magazine. So I sit down and I listen to music. There's probably Lil Willie John songs. I know those songs by heart from way back then. But he sang first tenor. He was like a natural first tenor. Who are some of the people
Absolutely.
That he influenced?
Oh, my goodness.
How much time you got? Yeah, how much longer do you have for this interview?
Well, we got a long time.
You can go with the more popular names, like, well, from his era, you can look at Jackie Wilson, you can look at Sam Cooke, you can look at Otis Redding, you can look at, what's the singer that we met that Dad loved that he also inspired? He recently passed.
Is that
Little Jimmy Scott?
Johnny Taylor.
No, Jimmy Scott passed away. Okay, all right.
No, Jimmy didn't pass away.
That's the wrong person. I'm sorry.
Right.
I was trying to get Kevin
Johnny
to give
Taylor
me who it was.
Johnny Taylor was a big one.
Oh, Johnny Taylor.
Yeah, Johnny Taylor.
But we could go on. We could go to the Jeffrey Osborne. We could go to George Benson.
Yeah.
You know, to those people, too.
Yeah. I saw George recently when I went to L.A. for the NAMM show, and I walked up and tapped him on the shoulder, and I said, but this is family. He turned around, had the biggest grin on his face, and I told him that the book was out, and so I just sent him a book like a couple of days ago.
Okay.
And, yeah.
You know, and
so many people, Marvin Gaye, Stevie, And then you have the next generation. You have the Ushers. You have it's so much of his influence out there. You can hear it in so many different artists.
You know, Norman, I have an interesting story, and part of it that Susan has in the book. When we talked to George Benson shortly before the book came out, he said his approach to vocals came a lot from what he heard in Lil Willie John. In fact, he re-recorded one of Lil Willie John's songs. He did Let Them Talk some years later too. So he said the way he approaches vocals, a lot of that comes from his listening and his studying what my dad did years ago.
And you know, he mentioned that it was with the jazz clubs where he would go hear Willie sing after, say, a show at the Apollo. He wanted to hear him, you know, sitting in with a jazz band up in Harlem. That's where George would really dig it, you know.
Well, you know,
he always tells me about this. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's your time. Go ahead, and I just hold my thought.
No.
Go ahead.
No, he was telling me, and he mentioned this, Susan, you may remember, he always mentions that like, he went into a club and saw my father sing Willow Weep for Me. I don't remember
the
song.
That's it.
But he said that was the most incredible version of Willow Weep for Me that he had ever heard. So I'm still looking for the song. I've never heard it.
You haven't
Willow
heard it?
Willow Weep for Me. That you by your father or Willow Weep for Me?
Oh, it's
well, no, he said he heard my father
standard.
Sing
it. It's an old standard.
I guess.
Well, that's real. That's definitely a big standard. But I'm so excited about doing this interview. There's a whole bunch of stuff that I don't want to miss anything. But this is important to the sons of Lil Willie John. But you talked about wanting to do your father be inducted into the Hall of Fame. You wanted a book. You wanted four things, and you wanted a film was the fourth thing I think. And
yeah,
we played Usher. But do you think Usher could play would be the one to play Lil Willie John right now?
You know, there are a lot of people that come to mind. I can't think of the guy's name. People were talking about the guy who played Quincy in Ray. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. But let me just be really honest, and this is my opinion. I think that you might have to have someone on screen do it, but I think if you're going to have somebody bring out the essence of the voice, the only person alive I think could do that is Keith John.
Yeah.
Keith sounds more like Lil Willie John than anybody I've ever heard, and I've been listening to him all my life.
Well, that's not Keith John saying it, but okay, I'll take it.
Maybe you have young Keith play him and Keith John sing him.
Hey.
Well, you know, that's maybe a thought, but in terms of the voice, if you're going to use anything other than the original recordings, you got to have Keith John
absolutely.
Do it.
Has anybody, there's another thing we need to talk about, and we need to do some, I'm a good agitator, we need to talk about an unsung. Let's give
absolutely. Thank you.
We want Willie John story to be told on unsung. Could you
an episode.
Give that a plug?
Yeah.
It might be in the works, because I heard that when they were in town in Detroit doing the research on the David Ruffin one that's going to air February 27th. They had our book with them, the producers.
Oh, very good, very good.
You know, it's interesting, too, that we're talking about this, though, Norman, because a friend of mine sent me an email. He said, you know, there's not a lot of video footage available of Lil Willie John. He said, but here's the twist. He said, instead of having video footage, you could have some artists actually sing Lil Willie John songs. I said, that would be a different way to do unsung, you know, kind of a tribute type thing.
Yeah.
But if they do that, I think they should have Stevie and Keith at least do one song.
Yeah, and because of the book, they have a lot of the information, so it's not like they have to search a lot of different places. I think if they pull some of the people that he influenced in and kind of interviewed him, they'll have more than enough to fill up an hour. They might have to do a 2-hour episode of something.
Right. Well, so
I know there's something in a box somewhere out there. Somebody had a camera.
Well, no, we know that's out there. We just got to find it. We're still trying to find it. So maybe, Norman, you can put that word out, too. We're still trying to find video footage of Lil Willie John.
And we're desperately trying to find it. We're not going to stop until we find it.
Right.
Okay.
Because we know it exists.
Definitely we know it exists. Now, you know, I played in the beginning of the show, I played Never Letting Me Go. And that's when I heard those harps the first time, to borrow a term from, I'm stealing this from Donnie Simpson, I thought I had died and gone to heaven.
Yeah, that
when
was
I heard, I was waiting to for someone to greet me. I said, those harps.
Well, Norman, imagine as kids, I heard this for the first time in 1968. Right after my father died, Keith and I heard it. My mom heard it for the first time in 68, and it just blew us away because we had never heard that type of orchestration behind his voice before.
Exactly. And to hear the and then strings come out, and then the
voice come out.
Just let me love you tonight. I mean, it's amazing. Just the way it sets up the voice. It's incredible. I'm telling you.
I warned you, Norman. Norman, I warned you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I said I was gonna be a good boy today.
I warned you, Norman.
But I thought we were gonna do some impression stuff. I could I saw an interview with Fred Cash, and he talked about how we could sing, you know, sing high. We could sing high all day long, and I think Fred could even sing higher than Curtis.
Oh, wow. Well, Norman, what do you want to do?
People get ready. There's a train coming.
I'll sing background. I mean, it's all right. it's all right because I'm a background. That's my. I'm a background singer. I don't have to sing lead. I like to back up.
It's all right. It's all right. It's all right. Have a good time, 'cause it's all right. Oh, it's all right.
Now listen to the beat. Boom, boom, boom. I want you to sing it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And move your feet
when
you sound.
When you move the stone,
everybody knows that it's fine. Well, it's fine.
All right, that's all right. You guys sing with how long did? Was your tenure with, you're still with Stevie. What am I talking about? How long was your tenure? You're still with Stevie, correct?
Well, the way it started out, though, Stevie was going to have his own record label, and he was going to feature Kevin and Keith, Kim Jam, the John Brothers, on his label.
Right.
So he recorded a lot of songs with us, but those songs were never released. One of the ones that we really loved a lot, we did a rendition of Talk to Me that Stevie produced on us.
Yeah.
And Keith and I are singing the leads and stuff, and Keith and I and Stevie are singing the background on the song. And so so that's how it started out back in 1981. We went out there, got the idea, we were going to do this album. Stevie was going to be the next Berry Gordy.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened is I was going back and forth and forth and back. Kevin was a newlywed, and then he just decided his kids started being born. So he said, you know what, I need to be home to raise my kids. And so I became a solo artist by default. And I kept noticing when Steve was in town, we would get a couple of songs done, and then he'd leave town to go on the road, and then I'd be sitting, twiddling my thumbs. Sometimes I'd still be out in L.A. just waiting for him to come back off tour. So what I did was one time I was home, and I got him on the phone, and we were just talking a lot about nothing. And then I said, he told me he was getting ready to go do a tour, and I said, you know, you really need to get me on tour with you so I could sing those low notes. And then he laughed, right? He laughed, and then about a week later, he left and went on tour, and I was heartbroken. I was like, dog, he didn't even tell me no. He just laughed. So then the next time he came back, once again, we're on the phone talking about nothing, and he says, so are you ready to go on tour? And I said, yeah, I'm ready. I thought he was bluffing, so I figured I'm going to call this bluff. And he said, okay, you got a passport? And I said, no. I said something really fast and then hung up on him, got in the phone book. That's how long ago that was. I got in the phone book, not on the Internet, and I looked up how to get a passport, like expedited really quick. So it cost me about all the money that I had at the time, but I was able to call him back less than a week later and say, yeah, I got a passport. What about it, right? And then he said, oh, you do? And I said, yeah. He said, okay, we get ready to go to Japan. I said, wow. That was my first tour.
Wow.
Well, did your father tour outside of the United States? Did he ever come to Canada, or did he go to the Caribbean, or can you talk about that, Susan?
You know, we couldn't document anything.
Yeah. I do believe he did the islands, because I remember my mom that she was with him doing some of that stuff. But
because
I lived in Miami. I don't know if it was Barbados. It was somewhere over there. When we lived in Miami, we were always in the Bahamas.
But he didn't do any performing there, though, did he?
There may have been some clubs or something like that, but not anything really big, I don't think.
Yeah.
If he had done
Europe, we would have had film up the wazoo, you know.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
The Europeans. Really,
I'm pretty sure he didn't do the overseas stuff, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, the situation in Seattle, where he was sent to prison, from everything I gathered, that was a situation where he was convicted of murder, but it seemed like that
manslaughter.
Manslaughter, but it looked like it was a case of self-defense. Could you talk about that situation? And it seemed like it was a really unjust situation.
Yeah,
you know, well, thanks to, we got hold of Kim Field, who wrote an amazing Village Voice story in the early 90s about the whole case and the trial. And thanks to him, I got hold of the prosecuting attorney, who said outright that there were two ways that the defense should have taken, one of two ways, which is one was self-defense, and the other was any one of the people in that house could have done it, and no one can be quite sure who. But the self-defense, because Willie was smaller than the guy who attacked him, and he attacked him first, he was defending himself against a much larger man. And the second realm of the defense could have been, you know, so many people had their hands on the weapon, and they were all drinking, it was late night. They kept changing their stories. It was just a messy, messy case. But unfortunately, Willie didn't take it real seriously at the time, and his defense attorney was on his last legs. He was, according to the prosecuting attorney, he was a heavy drinker at that point. And so it was an unfortunate set of circumstances all the way around.
A lot of unfortunate circumstances, not just one or two, but a host of them.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunate that he had to even just go to that after-hours party. Go ahead, Norman.
Can you talk about Seattle, Washington in 1960, around that at that particular time? That should have been. I know Seattle is not the most. Washington State is not the most. It's not apartheid situation, but at the same time,
well, you know, Norman,
during that period, there was problems with African Americans in the whole country, right?
And you know, Norman, the prosecuting attorney, is a white guy, and he's telling me this, an author, and I'm not African American myself. He said that he felt that Willie wasn't getting a fair shake because of his race, because.
Mm-hmm.
Partly, you know, it wasn't that the jurors were that set against him, but it was not a jury of his peers by any means.
Right.
There was no diversity in the jury pool at all.
Right. They couldn't relate to this young, talented, you know, people might even say conceited.
Yeah.
You know, confident. You know, kind of young person. They couldn't relate to that.
Yeah. Yeah, confident at best. A little cocky, on the edge of cocky at worst, because I mean he knew he had a gift, and he knew how people he saw how people responded to his gift, and you know it's easy for a lot of people to associate that with power, but then he's in a place where you know race relations are not exactly kind, and he's there and he's there getting some adulation from a couple of white women who, you know, my father was colorless. He didn't care. He saw people as people, same way as we do. And this other person that happened to be white, did he had a problem with that. And you can go to many bars
offices around the country where you have somebody that's big that figures, you know, I'm big, so I'm superior, and if you don't like it, then I'll beat you up kind of situation of a bully situation. And so, you know, a lot of circumstances happen. You never know. But I found it the most disheartening for me that my uncle went to the trial, and he said at the end of the case, judge said to my father, "Well, we're going to make an example out of you."
I think the exact quote was, "We're going to take you off your feet for a while," or something like that.
Yeah, well, the way he said to me, it was like what I said, yeah.
And I think that also they wanted to, that was an illegal after-hours drinking place, and I think they wanted to make it look like they were cracking down on this, you know.
Let me ask you, first of all, I'm speaking with Susan Whitehall, Keith and Kevin John, the sons of Little Willie John, and I wanted to ask you, at the time of this incident, what type of support did Little Willie John get from the African American and the general community? I know James Brown was a big went to see him when he was
supporter.
In prison. Could you talk about the support at that particular time? This is Black Power, civil rights, and all of that. Had he been forgotten by the masses, or was there an outpouring of support for your father?
Well, you know, we were very, very young then, so I can't talk about that in detail. I know there were a couple people that Susan talked to. I think Jesse Jackson, there were some letters written in my dad's behalf. Susan, you might want to talk about talk to that a little
Don,
bit.
Oh, you know, promoters like Don Robey, who was a famous promoter down in the South.
Texas, right, yeah.
And also, Jesse Jackson got involved too, but one of the problems was, you think about it, this was the spring of 1968. Martin Luther King Jr. was murdered in March.
In April. Right,
and
exactly.
So this is when Willie was having severe problems in prison, and they were trying to get Jesse to help him and all. So it all sort of got pushed by the wayside by everybody, African American community, you know. There was so much going on in that spring, and I don't think Jesse was able to
respond because he was probably responding to the death assassination of Dr. King, right?
Exactly.
Exactly.
He was up to his neck in all the stuff around Dr. King's death. And I also think, you know, it's a different time and place. If there had been the Internet back then, the news of what was happening to Willie and what eventually happened, his death, would have spread faster. There was a lot of people that didn't even know about it for months. The way,
right.
you know, news gets out, and it was a much different time. So you could almost be buried alive out there in prison and have people forget about you.
Well, you know, could we talk about the last sessions with David Axelrod and H.B. Barnum, the 1966 David Axelrod and H.B. Barnum sessions? I guess Susan, you could talk about that because Mr. John was able to I guess he was out on bail at that particular time, and what do you know about that particular session?
Well, I know Mabel helped set that up, and he was signed to Capitol. They thought he was free. Willie was deliriously happy because, you know, this was the label of his idols, and to have the full Capitol treatment like the guys were describing, you know, the musicians, the strings, everything. That's just everything he wanted. And H.B. Barnum was to do the arranging. And I talked to both H.B. and also Axelrod. David Axelrod's in his 80s, and some of his memories, I think, were a little fuzzy, but he was pretty good. H.B. was sharp as a tack, and it just, you know, he met with the top guy at Capitol, and Axelrod was assigned to him. David had already been doing Lou Rawls, and David claims that there was some bad feeling on Lou's part about this. I'm not so sure about that, but he remembers that. And Willie was just—it was going to be like a whole new chapter of his life, a whole new career for him, a whole new sound. And so they did the sessions. They never did any overdubs on the vocals, so he didn't have a chance because he had to go back to Seattle, back to prison. But he was very happy. He really thought that the prison thing, it was just, it was going to be dealt with. He was going to be out, and this all would resolve itself. If you got, you know, the guy.
No, I was going to say, you know, too, Norman, Keith and I, we've listened to this thing for 40 years, and I can't talk about the details around it, but I hear exuberance. I hear a happy excitement. From a standpoint of a vocalist, of a singer, he was on top of his game, and he was happy to be doing it. And I'll tell you, to me, it's some of the best material he's ever done. And I like the recording of today, as she was saying, they didn't do any overdubs. Basically, he took the same song, he might have done it three times, from beginning to end with the orchestra, and then they went to the next song. It's like amazing.
And so a lot of those recordings are what they might even call, even back then, unfinished, because they didn't go back and put the polish on it.
Right.
Yeah. If you listen to just the uncut, just the raw material, it's great material.
Absolutely.
And that's a lot of the Wrecking Crew on that, of the musicians, you know, the top of the line.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should take another music break. I wanted to play Need Your Love So Bad. I really wanted to play Need Your Love So Bad, and then I want to come back and continue to talk about the last recording.
This wonderful book, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
And this is I Need Your Love So Bad, one of my favorites.
I need someone's hand to lead me through the night. I need someone's arms to hold and squeeze me tight. When the night begins and I'm dealing with, I need your love so bad. I need some lips to feel next to mine. I need someone to stand up and tell me when I'm lying. And when the lights are low and it's time to go, I need your love so bad. So give it up and bring it home to me, or write it on a paper so it can be read to me. Tell me you love me and stop driving me mad, 'cause I need your love so bad. A voice that will talk to me at night. Don't worry, baby, we won't fuss and fight. Listen to my plea, bring it home to me. I need your love so bad.
To lead me through the night, I need for someone's arms to hold and squeeze me tight. When the night begins, baby, I'm at an end, 'cause I need your love so bad.
I need some lips to feel next to mine. I need someone to stand up and tell me when I'm blind. And when the lights are low and it's time to go, I need your love so bad.
So now give it up me, baby, and stop driving me mad.
'Cause I need your love so bad.
Oh, I need a soft voice that'll talk to me at night. Don't you worry about it, baby. Everything is gonna be alright. Please listen to my plea and bring it on home to me. Baby, I need your love so bad.
And I'm on the line with Susan Whitetail, Keith John, Kevin John, and there's a great new book out on Little Willie John called Fever. Little Willie John, A Fast Life, Mysterious Death, and the Birth of Soul. And H.B. Barnum, who was with Aretha Franklin for almost three decades, musical director, so on and so forth, and a man who worked with everyone from Francis Albert Sinatra to everyone, His quote about Little Willie John, Little Willie John goes like this, quote, "In bad voice, he could out-sing anyone," end of quote. That's from H.B. Barnum. That's a hell of a statement, isn't it?
He also said that the two best singers he ever heard were Aretha and Willie.
Wow. Oh, he said that?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's amazing.
Susan, you spoke with B.B. King when you did the book. Talk about B.B. King and his relationship to Little Willie John.
Well, you know, B.B. had so many hits in the 50s and the R&B realm, and he became great friends with Willie. Both he and his wife became friends with Willie and his wife, Starlin. So they were social friends, even after they met as performers. But I tried to get an interview with B.B. through the Detroit News to do it for the news and do it for the book as well. But they just said no when he was going to play Detroit. He didn't need the publicity. You know, he sells out anyway. He just doesn't do interviews at this stage. He just doesn't have to. But so I went through back channels, people I knew who worked at the Palace, because that's where he was playing, I believe. Yeah, he was playing Pine Knot. And so my high-up inside folks went backstage, and they were, yeah, and they got a message through. It was like James Bond to his road manager. And the road manager, they were given my phone number. He called me, and he said, B.B. says he will talk about Little John anytime and anywhere. So this was great. So I was able to get on the phone with him, and he was very apologetic. He said, I don't know how much I can remember. I don't know how much I can help you, but I will be happy to try. I said, oh, hey, anything. We went on, and he had just played a song of Willie's on his tour bus as he was driving up from Indiana through Michigan. He said a day really didn't go by that he didn't listen to Willie. And he just was such a fan of his deeply for years. And so he talked about what it was like and how he saw Willie's voice. It was so romantic, the essence of his voice. And it would draw women and girls like crazy in the audience and the screaming and all that. And he said he just wanted to be close to him and try and catch some of those girls, some of the...
Yeah, he said the same thing to me. The last time I saw B.B., we were doing the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame 25th anniversary show in New York. And I saw him through the rehearsals, and he gave me a big hug. And because, you know, he feels so connected to my family because he loved my dad so much. And he started telling me about, yeah, me and your dad, we used to hang out. And then sometimes, you know, your daddy was always surrounded by beautiful women, and he said they just loved him. He started singing; he was like a Pied Piper. He said, and we used to like to just be around Willie. He said because we were helping to pick up on some of his scraps, some of them that he rejected, some of them, you know, because he could only hang out with so many people at a time. But he said it was always all these a lot of women, because you know they loved his voice and they admired him.
Well, it's interesting.
I'll give you another joke. We've interviewed L.C. Cook, Sam Cook's brother, on this. On this show many, many times, and
okay.
He said they would see Willie John coming. They would get to running because Willie would have. He said he always had a car full of women.
Yeah. You know, the other thing B.B. said was to him, it's that he had what he called a signifying voice. He just had such a unique and instantly recognizable voice. But that's what he really appreciated the most about him. And you always know it's him.
Yeah. Well, this time, I think you guys feel like singing another one. I'll lay out of this one.
You got to lay out?
I'm a background man.
Okay.
What would you like to do? We're gonna stay on till 4, so you got anything you wanna do?
Kevin, what do you think?
They can do talk to me. Yeah.
Well, talk okay. to me. Let's well, go on. Let's
how
go
much on. Of it do you wanna do? We're gonna do a little bit of it. We're gonna do the rendition that Stevie produced on us years ago.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Okay, it has a little intro and it's a little different, so you have to listen close. I've often heard of me, you think. I've even seen a passing wink leading me to believe you feel much more.
Dun, 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 dun. But never would I be so bold to say I know what's in your soul. But since to this love mystery, you hold the key, please talk to me. Talk to me. Now, baby, won't you talk to me? I love the way you talk. Love the way you talk to me.
Anyway, his version was really different. He added the thing on there, and then my father's version was like, talk to me, yeah. Talk to me. But Steve's version was like, ooh, talk to me, talk to me, ooh, talk to me now, baby, talk to me. I love the way you talk, love the way you talk to me. Kind of, you know, the vibe was different. The vibe was different, but the essence was the same, you know?
Right. But so. Stevie obviously was influenced by your father tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and Glenn Lewis, who is from Toronto.
Oh, I know Glenn. Yeah.
He sounds like he had a little Stevie Wonder in him too, because
you can hear the influence.
Little Willie John and a little Stevie too. Yeah, he's from
That's what we call second generation Little Willie John, because because Stevie was so influenced by my dad, and Glenn is influenced by Steve. I don't know if he ever heard my dad or not. I never even asked him that question. But
well, his father.
But we call that second generation inspiration.
Right. Well, Glenn Lewis's father is Glenn Ricketts, and he is a Jamaican soul singer. I mean, he was really influenced by Donny Hathaway, and Donny Hathaway kind of took him under his wing. He went to Chicago, and he was under the influence of Donny Hathaway and John Edwards of the Spinners, who replaced in the Spinners. And Glenn's father, and his father is a Stevie Wonder nut.
The way that probably worked out is his father was probably putting Steve's records
all the time
at the house, and that's how Glenn got the exposure to that music probably early, and wanted to do it, you know, similar to the way that he heard it. So that's great. But Glenn's got a gift. I had a couple of conversations with him the last time that we played Toronto. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was the last time you played Toronto?
It seems like it was about a year and a half ago, right? 2 years ago?
It was. That's the only time that I ever missed a Stevie Wonder concert.
Oh, come on. You can't miss it when I'm there.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, no. You know what? Then you caught the one before that. Then you caught another one. Missed that one, you caught another one.
Oh, yeah. That's a politics of the business. I don't even want to go into it.
Let me just say one more thing about, because we were talking about inspiration. The wonderful thing about it is it can go both ways. In the case of Donny Hathaway and Stevie influenced Donny Hathaway, and Donny Hathaway influenced Stevie.
Mm-hmm.
Stevie influenced me, and Steve often tells me how much I influence him. It's like in a lot of cases, when you have the older person or the one that was doing it first, then the next person hears that person, they can only be, you know, it's, you know, affected in that way. But it can go back and forth. You know what I'm saying? This person, Stevie and I talked about it a bunch of times. It's a certain thing he likes about my voice, and I like the opposite thing about his voice. He likes the point of my voice. I like the roundness of his voice. So we can inspire each other. Inspiration is a wonderful thing. Oh, and Aaron Neville.
Yeah.
I talked to Aaron Neville one time, and we didn't get a chance to do it for the book. But he told me, he said, man, because I was talking to him. He was saying he was being really nice and friendly. We were doing a concert that night. And he said, and I mentioned my dad's name, and he froze. And he said, man, wasn't nobody bad like your daddy. Couldn't nobody sing like your father.
Yeah.
So, you know, the inspiration.
Well, you know,
I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
I love the Jimmy Scott stuff, too. I mean, Jimmy loved Willie, and they liked each other personally, but they liked mm-hmm. admired each other's voices. But it's a similar
thing. Yeah, my father loved Jimmy Scott's voice. My uncle told us how much he used to always talk about how much he loved Jimmy Scott's voice.
Yeah. And then they were, you know, different, unique in and of themselves, but...
Mm-hmm.
There was a time that one of the Funk Brothers told me that Willie was all upset. He just said, oh, he's going to out-sing me. And he's going, are you insane? You're Willie John. You know? But, you know, how it is. People go back and forth with their ego and whatever.
Well, Glenn Lewis, his father, he left Toronto one time, and I didn't see him for many, many years. But this was in the 70s, and he said, you know, Glenn Jr., what you were saying early, he said he can sing better than me now.
His father was a singer too. Then
his father is a singer. They had done a rendition of Gene Chandler's "That Girl," and Glenn was rapping on it because Glenn used to rap and he used to dance.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, And
fantastic.
He said, yeah, but that whole inspiration thing is something else. But George Benson and Lou Willie John, that's a real that was a real revelation to me.
Well, yeah, if you go back in his archives, in George's musical archives, you'll find Let Them Talk. You'll find that he did a version. And as I listened to it, I'm like, wow, because it was only 4 or 5 years ago the first time I heard it. Because Susan and I were, you know, working on this book with Susan has been a really wonderful thing, because I find things, I've learned things I didn't know about before. And in doing some of the research, I listened to George sing Let Them Talk. And I'm thinking, man, who is this? He almost sounds like Lou Willie John. And then I found out that it was actually George, you know. So yeah, there's a connection there, definitely a connection.
And it's another artist, and I've never met him. I've heard a few of his songs, and I've seen him perform on shows and stuff. His name is Robert Cray.
Oh, yeah.
Through.
And you're listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. We're on the phone with Susan Whitehill, Kevin and Keith John, and I think we had some technical difficulties, but we are back live and direct. I think, who was speaking when we got cut off? Hello?
I was speaking, Keith. Now, what I was speaking about is another issue. I remember I was talking about Aaron Neville, I wanted to expand on that. That when we had a chance to sit and talk with Levi Stubbs, who was the lead voice of the Four Tops forever, he was telling us how much he admired my father. We were talking about inspiration. I remember that. And how much he was telling us how much he admired my father, because my father could sing anything, and he never got caught up. You know, a lot of singers who do the riffing and stuff, they get caught up. He said my father never got caught up. He could sing anything, and I know he inspired my father too. So that's another mutual admiration situation. You know,
they loved each other. In fact, when we went over to see him shortly before he died, Susan, we were all there talking to him. We had the man in tears, though, because he was just expressing how he felt about my father and the relationship that they had. Mm-hmm. And Susan writes about that wonderfully in the book. So your listeners, they really got to get the book. I mean, there's so many anecdotes like that that really built on the whole story.
Yeah.
Really,
they
grew up as boys
together.
Yeah, they were young boys as friends.
Yeah.
Yes, they were.
Yeah.
And they were always involved in some kind of shenanigans.
Yeah,
always.
Yep, mischief. He used to help my father climb out the window and all kind of crazy stuff. It's all in the book. And also, you get to see the way my father inspired James Brown, who, once again, the second and third and fourth generation inspiration, all the way down to Michael Jackson, from James Brown to, you know what I'm saying, to Usher and all these different people. It's, you know.
And that's the thing, too, because many people, everybody knows who James Brown was,
mm-hmm.
but they don't know that James Brown opened for Little Willie John.
That's why he should be on Unsung, so they can tell a story
and they don't know how much James Brown loved him. Shortly after he died, James Brown did a dedication, a tribute album, singing all these Little Willie John songs.
Holding my father's album in his hand.
On the album cover.
Exactly.
I think there's a photograph of that on YouTube, correct?
I saw that,
yeah.
It's called Thinking About Little Willie John and a Few Nice Things.
Yes. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
He sings a lot of his songs on there too.
Yeah, all his songs. All the songs on there, I think, are songs that he's covering of my father's.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to go back and do a little historical thing now. Your father and Levi Stubbs. Your father, I read that in the book that your father went to, I guess it was Pershing High School in Detroit.
Yeah.
And apparently. He was quite a good student, but prior to going to Pershing, he went to the Bad Boys School in Detroit. Levi went there, but in Los Angeles, that type of school was called Jacob A. Riis. And Barry White went to Jacob A. Riis. And in Jamaica, some of the top musicians, it was called Alpha's Boys School. A lot of the top musicians went to Alpha, and they had a very good musical program. So, you know, but your father, he was well read, and was he a sportsman? I want to say, did he follow sports and news, or can you talk about that?
He loved sports. He loved golf too. I remember he loved golf, but
before Tiger Woods, huh?
Well, you know,
Tiger Woods. Or I should say, what's her name? Althea Gibson was before Tiger Woods. You know, she was a golfer too.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I didn't know that.
You know, his friends in the band said that he used to set up a bar, and he'd be in whatever cocktail lounge, whatever hotel, they'd have a TV in there, and he'd be talking about the sports game, whatever sport it was, whether it was football, baseball. You know, boys back then, baseball was huge, much more than with young people today.
And two of his brothers played a lot of baseball, Raymond and Ernest played a lot of baseball.
What positions did they play?
I don't remember.
Well, baseball was, I remember, I grew up in L.A., the Dodgers came from Brooklyn, and Detroit won the pennant in 68, right?
Yeah.
They won the World Series, man.
The whole series
thing.
In 68. Yeah, the whole thing.
Yeah.
But before Willie
grew up real close to where the Negro League played, you know, the DeQuinder Park.
Right.
But he got to see Jackie Robinson and a lot of before he joined the majors.
When we lived in Miami, I'm sorry, Susan, go ahead.
Yeah.
When we lived in Miami, he would go to, because, you know, all the baseball teams have their training camps and stuff
down
in Miami. Mm-hmm. And I remember as a kid going down there, I don't remember which one it was, but we were Pittsburgh Pirates fans when we were young. And I remember my dad, I want to say either Willie Stargell or Roberto Clemente, who was one of my favorite players, you know, and he knew Willie Mays, so he loved baseball. I mean, he really loved baseball.
Mm-hmm. And he loved to go to the fights down there, too, in Miami.
That's where Ali fought, right?
Yeah, he was Cassius Clay back then. Yes.
Right.
He was a big friend of the family, yeah.
Right,
You mentioned the Pittsburgh Pirates. Doc Ellis was, and Roberto Clemente were on the Pirates. Roberto Clemente was one of, he played right field. He had a good arm from Puerto Rico.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
He was my man.
Yeah.
But Doc
that was,
Ellis
that was my...
Go ahead.
No, my favorite two players ever, and it's hard to pick two ever, were Roberto Clemente and Willie Mays. I mean, those are guys I grew up just watching, you know.
Right. Well, Doc Ellis was from Los Angeles, and he's the guy who pitched a no-hitter high on acid, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Doc, there's supposed to be a documentary on him, but, yeah, Doc Ellis... He was quite a genuine character. He just passed away a couple of years ago, but yeah, it was.
Oh, okay.
You said your uncles played baseball, huh?
Not professionally, but
they. Mm-hmm. And I remember when they going through school. I remember especially my uncle Ernest.
Did your father like I know Sam Cooke was supposedly renowned for, like, reading books. Was your father an avid reader or a newspaper man? Did he keep up with current events and that sort of stuff?
Well, I would say newspaper and current events a lot. You know, I think it's kind of hard when you travel a lot to keep up with books. I mean, you didn't have Nooks and Kindles and things like that back then. So it was a little more difficult, but he did keep up with the newspaper and what was happening in the news, and especially in sports. He loved those things.
But also understand that he got into the music thing at such a young age that the preoccupation with the music and the traveling and all that stuff is, you know, it gets heavy.
But,
it gets heavy even when you're traveling.
At the same time, you know, Detroit schools were really tough, man, and so... For him to get the grades he did, and you can see the one report card is in the book. It's world history, you know. He's got some tough classes there. He's getting A's, you know. So
he was like almost an A student, right?
Yeah. The trouble he would get into was behavioral. It wasn't because his grades weren't good.
Right.
So it was all mostly related to girls. And back then, the bar was very high for behavior. If you were caught, you know, messing around in class, swearing and doing stuff, you were out. They'd send you to more. So it wasn't really, really bad behavior that would get you sent there.
Right.
You didn't have to do that much.
Right.
We have about 14 minutes, and... is there anything else that anyone else would like to? I would like to play another piece of music shortly. But what is there? Any topics that we need to cover before we sign off at 4?
You know what, Norman? This is Kevin. I just like to say we want people to know where they can get the book.
Absolutely.
You know, and you can probably get it at a lot of the local stores in your area. But Amazon.com is a place that you can get it from anywhere on the planet.
Yeah.
So Amazon.com has the book. And the reviews, if you want to know what the book is about, go out and look at the reviews on Amazon.com. They're getting excellent reviews. The book is being very well received, and we're really happy about that. We're really happy about that. And we want to keep talking about unsung, so people will get in their head
We need to have an unsung.
And movie Oscar, you know. And I just want to reiterate, www.amazon.com. And the name of the book is Fever.
Little Willie John's Fast Life, Mysterious Death,
and the Birth of Soul.
It's also available at thebookbeat.com, and you can get signed copies at thebookbeat.com.
Yes, I don't want to forget that locally. Yes, you can be
anywhere and get thebookbeat.com, and you can order a signed copy from them. But also, if anyone knows anything about film or video of Willie, and we just got a very nice honor. The book was chosen as a Michigan Notable Book for 2012. So we get to go up to the, you know, Lansing, and we're one of only 20 books chosen of the best books about Michigan or by Michigan authors, et cetera.
Well,
we're going to
play. I wanted to testify that is a good book. I've read it. I'm going to reread it. There's so many things in there that I really didn't know. And like I said in the beginning, even geniuses can make mistakes, and I make quite a few. But we wanted to play. This is a song that I thought the Beatles recorded, "Leave My Kitten Alone," and we're going to come back and talk. But we want to listen to the Fleetwood Mac did covers, the Beatles, Peggy Lee, Beyonce. And I'm trying to figure out, maybe there's a guy up here named Michael Bublé. I think he may have done Fever. I don't know. I'll check that out. But did Bublé
I wouldn't be surprised.
Fever? Yeah,
Madonna did Fever, too.
I didn't know that. But
Madonna, Fever, Elvis, everybody.
Well, everybody did Fever. You're right. But we wanted to listen to the Beatles and Leave My Kitten Alone.
you if you don't leave her alone. Well, Mr. Talk, I'm gonna get you on the top of your head.
Go ahead. Work it out.
This is Norman Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, on Uhuru Radio, and we have about 5 minutes left, and I would like to thank Naya Binga Zimbabwe for handling the technical aspect of the show today. I would like to thank Susan Whitehall, who is a regular. She's with the Detroit News. And also would really like to thank Kevin and Keith John, the sons of Little Willie John. And I guess we're going to let Kevin or Keith is going to basically whatever final thoughts we have for Kevin Keith. Go ahead.
Yeah, we just wanted to say, first of all, we want to thank you for allowing us to be on your show, Norman. And we want to just encourage as many people as are interested to go out and get the book. This is a great book, but they have to know where to get it. It's going to be available at Amazon.com. And also, if you want an autographed copy of the book, you can go on to thebookbeat.com, or if you're local in Detroit, you can go down to the store, the Bookbeat.
It's on Greenfield, between 10 and 11 Mile.
So in Toronto, you can get that at a different book list.
Okay, well, as long as you know where that is, you tell them where that is. But, Norman, as we're about to close, can you just repeat that quote that Marvin Gaye said about Little Willie John? I think it bears saying.
This is Marvin Gaye's quote, Little Willie John is the soul singer's soul singer, end of quote.
I think that kind of says it all. So we've had a lot of excitement about the book. We're trying to keep it going. We want people to go out and get the book, and we want them to be looking forward to an unsung episode and call the unsung producers and write them and do all you can to get it going for us.
Now, they're doing David Ruffin February when?
27th.
February the 27th, and they've done the Marvelettes, so there would be a lot of people probably in the Detroit area that would be agitating for an unsung by Little Willie John, about Little Willie John, rather, right?
I think we hope so across the country. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Oh. I just want to add one thing. If you get an opportunity, now you've heard about the book, go out to YouTube and go out to iTunes and download some Little Willie John music so you can get more familiar with the music, and go out and definitely get the book. You should have the book so you can hear songs like Talk to Me and What If I Don't Love You, Baby, Good Saint Groceries, Eggs Ain't Poultry, and Mona Lisa Was a Man. Anyway, you got to hear the music. You got to get the book. And for those that follow on Facebook, you can go out to Fever Little Willie John's Fast Life and the Mysterious Death website on Facebook,
and you can get a lot of information about the book and about Little Willie John. And yeah, go out there and post your questions and get them answered and stuff.
Any book signings we have on there as well?
Right.
Exactly.
The last question is where is Fred Gorey, Masai Kariga Kenyatta, and where is Jay Butler, and what are they doing in terms of the Willie John book?
Oh, Jay Butler has been great. He's got a show on WDET in Detroit, public radio on, I believe,